Our last case is 12-2107, Mason City School District Board of Education versus Squire Hill Properties. Mr. Thomas?
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Scott Thomas on behalf of Squire Hill Properties. I will reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. In preparing to come before you this morning, I reviewed the briefs that we had prepared, and my boss, Carlo Wessels, did such a fine and comprehensive job, he left me scarcely anything to say. So I thought it might be, if I'm not too presumptuous, to look at the matter from your perspective, and mindful that this court, the highest court in Ohio, must proceed cautiously, particularly when there's constitutional issues involved. What is the best focus for that? And I came to the conclusion that my focus this morning should be on proposition of law number 4. Right, although that's the last one that we addressed, any of those propositions provides an independent basis for reversal of the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. Here, the facts relating to proposition of law number 4 are undisputed. The law that warrants reversal has been stated in the precedent of this court. It would be merely a restatement. The county appellees agree with Squire Hill that reversal on that basis is warranted. And the only person that disagrees, the Mason School District Board of Education, does not identify any argument in its brief, pages 7 and 8, that would refute proposition of law. They focus on something not relevant to that issue, but there's 3 paragraphs there, none of which speak to the problem. And so this court's opinion in that regard essentially can be reduced to 5 sentences. That the Board of Tax Appeals rendered a decision that was beyond the scope of the complaint and the counter-complaint filed by the parties, that it did so despite the absence of any evidence that would support its decision on the valuation of the property, that is, the troika, as this court has used that phrase, of the deed, the conveyance fee statement, and the purchase agreement. None of that was in evidence at either the Board of Revision or the Board of Tax Appeals. And for those reasons, the Board of Tax Appeals' decision to value the property at a sum higher than anyone anticipated, compounding the lack of notice that the landowner had, the present landowner at the time of the hearing, the case has to be reversed.
Reversed and remanded.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what happens on remand in your view?
Well, Squire Hill will have its first opportunity as the current owner to present evidence. Now, under the rules of the Board of Tax Appeals, 5715-1-15A, the Board of Tax Appeals is supposed to rely on the record of the Board of Revision. If they want to take additional evidence, they've got to schedule a hearing and do that. Right now, there's no evidence in the Board of Revision record regarding this prior sale as this court required. If they want to hear that evidence, that's all well and good. But Squire Hill will then have the opportunity to come back and explain why a sale that occurred in December of 2006 does not satisfy this court's recency requirement regarding a valuation in 2008. And as the court, I think, in the first case heard, there were some momentous things that happened in the real estate market between 2006 and 2008, and we want the opportunity to present that evidence. If there are no further questions, I'll wait for rebuttal.
Thank you. Counsel?
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Antaki, and I'm an attorney here on behalf of Mason City School District. I wanted to say it's a pleasure to be here before the court for the first time. May it please the court, if I could first address the motion to dismiss, which is still pending before this court, and then I will address the propositions of law in the brief. With respect to the motion to dismiss, this was filed by Mason because pursuant to Revised Code 5717-04 and 5717-03B, Wasserpak, who was the owner of record, Squire Hill, was required by those statutes to serve Wasserpak, who was the owner of record at the time before the BOR and also before the BTA. That notice of appeal from Squire Hill was not served on Wasserpak. Pursuant to the statute and this court's interpretation in the Columbus case, and that's Columbus versus Maple Canyon, we also have the Cincinnati case in 2007, and that involved Anchor Lions. In those cases, and also in Olympic Steel, the court has held that the provisions of those statutes are mandatory and jurisdictional. Therefore, since Squire Hill did not serve Wasserpak with the notice of appeal, the motion to dismiss should be granted, and this court would not have jurisdiction over the appeal.
Don't we have to look to see if it runs to the core of procedural efficiency? I mean, isn't there a limitation there that needs to be factored in?
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question. It's a due process notification. I would agree with that.
But Squire Hill had standing to file at the time, correct?
Squire Hill had standing to file the notice of appeal. They were the owner after the BTA decision was rendered. I want to make sure that I don't confuse the court with the due process argument, because it's important to revert back to the facts which show that Squire Hill was not the owner of record before the BTA. So if I may at this time move from the motion to dismiss to the propositions of law that were asserted in the briefs. First, let me just start with my roadmap, which is that the decision of the BTA should be upheld for three reasons. And the first is that Squire Hill was not denied due process during the BTA hearing. And again, this is where I want to point out and clarify the record. There were lots of colorful references to the facts in this case throughout the briefs, and I want to make sure that I make it clear to the court that Squire Hill was not the owner of record at the time of the BTA hearing. So, therefore, they were not required to have the due process notices that they're alleging at this time. In fact, what we now know, and the reason I'm saying we now know, is that there was a transfer of the subject property that took place, and that was approximately 22 months before the Board of Tax Appeals hearing. The reason that that is important is I would like the court to be aware that the parties, including the county appellees, the school district, prepared for the Board of Tax Appeals hearing. County appellees waived appearance before the Board of Tax Appeals. At no time in the 22 months between that transaction, between Wasserpak and Viking Partners, at no time between that transaction and the Board of Tax Appeals, did anyone from the property owner file a notice of appearance or change in ownership that's required by Ohio Administrative Code 57-1-03E.
Counsel, if I may, I'm trying to make a sense of that fact. You're talking about the 2006 transfer for ballpark $5.3 million?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
What are you talking about?
Well, Wasserpak initially, that's how they became the property owner of record, was the December 2006 transfer. And that transaction is the main consideration before the court. I wanted to make sure that I pointed out that the property transferred yet again, and this was after the BTA hearing, the property transferred three times during all of this relevant time period. And with respect to whether proper due process notifications were given, I wanted to make sure that you knew that we came into the BTA hearing. I arrived in Columbus on April 17th, which is the night before, and there was notification given by Attorney Bardak, who was counsel of record for Wasserpak. At that time, he said Wasserpak no longer owns the property. So that was the first notification that we were given that there was any transfer of the subject property.
I guess my question, though, to you is that we're being asked to look at what the Board of Tax Appeals did, and it looks to me like there was an arm's length, or not, no evidence to the contrary. There's an arm's length transaction for $5.3 million in 2006, and I noticed when the Board of Tax Appeals was all done with their handwritten notes, we ended up with a property value of $5.3 million.
That's correct. If I could explain that to you, Your Honor, I also need to mention I failed to reserve 3 minutes for Mr. Greer in my excitement. So if I could make sure that I do that, he's here on behalf of the county. What happened is that it was our appeal, the school district's appeal. We went before the BTA. At that time, we presented the evidence that was already in the record from the BOR. And that affirmative evidence was that there was a property record, the auditor's property record card reflected the fact that there was a transfer of the subject property in December 2006. We also mentioned to the BTA that throughout the hearing before the Board of Revision, there were numerous references to the existence of the sale. It was never disputed below, that this was an arm's length transaction. Instead, from the very beginning, Wasserpak was trying to present evidence of recency to try to contest the validity of that sale. So when we got before the BTA and we presented the evidence that the auditor's 2008 tax valuation was based on that 2006 transfer. When we looked at the statements of the sworn statements of the complainant, who is the property owner, that's when the Board of Tax Appeals asked me, why wasn't there a conveyance fee statement in this case? And I said, well, it's unusual because the complainant in this case is actually the property owner. And they weren't disputing that it was arm's length. They were disputing whether it was recent. And so when we came before the Board of Tax Appeals, they were further convinced that not only should the sale have been adopted, but that the other side failed to meet its burden of proof. As this court has said in the Cummins case and in North Royalton, that the opponent of using a sale price has the burden before the BTA. So in this case, we know that Wasserpak was supposed to have the burden of proof to rebut the sale as best evidence. No one showed up on behalf of Wasserpak. And that's why it looks like the evidence was one-sided, when in fact all the parties were properly notified and did not appear for various reasons. With respect to whether the last proposition of law that opposing counsel referenced, whether the BTA had sufficient evidence to increase the value, I would go back to the legislature and its intent to promote the validity of these sales and exclude and minimize the need for extrinsic evidence. Where we have a recent arm's length sale, that is supposed to be, that shall be the true value for tax purposes.
But counsel, isn't there a persuasive argument to be made that we're talking about troubled real estate times, and they come in and they say at the time it was worth $5 million, it was full, and today it's 50% empty?
That possibly could have been made as an argument, Your Honor, but if you look back at the, let me first address the Board of Revision hearing. At that time, the property owner presented the testimony of an appraiser. That appraiser looked at market conditions in 2009, that was the time of the hearing. The appraiser did not look at market conditions between the time of the sale, which was December 2006, and the tax lien date, which is January 1st, 2008. So a look back at the record shows that was actually an incomplete appraisal. It relied on 2009 income stream and expenses and vacancy rate. It was not a market analysis of how the changes in the market actually affected the subject property. And we contested, actually at that time, my co-counsel, Mr. DiMuzio, twice interrupted the proceedings to say, this is insufficient evidence, this should have been, we should be looking at the sale only. So in this case, we do not have evidence before the BOR that shows that this property was troubled and that it was affected by the market conditions. And second, before the BTA, we know that they did not show up, so that there was no one there on behalf of the property owner. So no evidence was given at that time to refute the validity of the sale. So, Your Honors, we have what this court has considered to be sufficient evidence of a recent arm's length sale. In the past, as opposing counsel used the word, a troika of a deed, a conveyance fee statement, that was sufficient. We also know that in First Cal, it said basic evidence is sufficient to meet that burden. In Berea, it said the sale shall be the true value, and the only rebuttal lies in recency and arm's length. Well, in this case, arm's length was taken off the table. They have never disputed that it was an arm's length transaction. And if you look back to the record before the Board of Revision, it is replete with references to the existence of the sale. Their arguments were solely based on recency. And what I would ask this court to do is to affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals that, in fact, in this case, because they are the opponent of using the sale price, Squire Hill had the burden to come forward with evidence that the sale was not recent. They did not meet that burden, and therefore the Board of Tax Appeals was correct in holding that the sale was the best evidence of value. If there's no further questions, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Greer.
Madam Chief Justice.
Was Honorable. This property in foreclosure when it was transferred?
Which transfer, Your Honor?
From Wasserpak?
Wasserpak.
Yes.
To Viking. Honestly, the record doesn't reflect that. I believe at the point it may have been, I believe it was a forced sale. The sale from Viking to, I believe, Squire Hill was not a forced sale.
And when was that?
I believe that was 2008. But Mr. Thomas would know that better than I.
All right.
The board simply says that there was no sufficient evidence to support the BTA's decision when it comes to this 2006 sale. If you look back through the Board of Revisions transcript, you don't have the troika presented. You don't have testimony by anyone who's knowledgeable about this 2006 sale. You don't have a stipulation of the parties that the 2006 sale occurred. You have the fact that the board acknowledges that one, that the complaints and the amended complaints both mention that there's a 2006 sale. It's simply not sufficient evidence of a 2006 sale. And the board, the BTA, was limited to the board's transcript because Mason did not present any evidence before the BTA. Mason could have easily presented evidence of the 2006 sale. It chose not to. They presented no evidence, they simply presented argument. Argument is not evidence, as this court well knows.
Counsel, I guess I'm a little troubled here. You're the appellee here, correct?
Yes, you are.
You've won at the Board of Tax Appeals. They increased the reduction, and it went back to $5.3 million.
Yes.
And they relied upon the 2006 sale, and they found that the troika had been met. So what are you saying today?
That there is no evidence of the troika in the transcript. It's simply not there. Now, the BTA can make its decision if it has sufficient evidence. We have no really real problem with them increasing the amount of the market value of this property, except that they simply have no evidence of it. And even if there is evidence of the 2006 sale, they didn't follow Worthington. They did not consider the changes in the evidence presented before the Board of Revision regarding the issue of recency.
So what are you asking us to do?
To remand and to back to the board, to the BTA for further proceedings, giving Mason and presumably Squire Hill, if this court doesn't dismiss, a second bite of the apple to request to present evidence that would support their respective positions.
And is that, okay, that's what the, right, thank you.
If there's no further questions.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Thomas.
To dovetail Mr. Greer's remarks, The thing that must be remembered, one can look at this transcript of the Board of Revision and see that there is no discussion of the 2006 sale other than a casual reference here or there. The reason it was not discussed, the reason there is no discussion of recency or arm's length character, is because it was not relevant. The only way that would be relevant is if Mason, in its countercomplaint, asked that the valuation be increased to that sale figure. They did not do that. They said to the Board of Revision, just keep it where it is. We're satisfied that the auditors got the valuation right, and that's where we want it to stay. So it was not ever incumbent upon the property owner to defend anything with regard to the sale. And so there was never the adversarial dialogue these proceedings anticipate with regard to the December 2006 transaction. It never happened.
Did you want to address the motion to dismiss that Ms. Antaki presented it?
I will briefly, Your Honor. The motion to dismiss asked this court to engage in a hyper-technicality in as much as it asks Squire Hill to serve itself. Indeed, they want us to serve a twice-removed predecessor in title that they know is now defunct. That futile gesture is inappropriate and impractical. The irony, of course, is Squire Hill, the party that was the property owner when the decision was certified on November 16, 2012, never got anything from the Board of Tax Appeals. It was only when the county's office sent us a tax bill and enclosed behind it a copy of the decision that Squire Hill, the current property owner, knew that this litigation was going on. And it's not the kind of thing that one can find. There's no list pendants filed. It's not kept in anything that a title examiner would search. And so our client was unaware that these proceedings were going on. And to say that that there's validity because all of the parties were properly notified, I don't know where that is in the record. It's undisputed that Mr. Bardock reported to the Board of Tax Appeals on the eve of their hearing, April 17th, we're not going to be there, we're not the owner anymore. They have the hearing on April 18th anyway, even though under the board's own rules, they can give a continuance for good cause.
Who would have asked for that continuance?
Your Honor, I submit that it should have been sua sponte. What better cause could exist than to give notification to the current property owner? The system insists upon that, and it can't be entrusted to the former property owner. That property owner has no interest in seeing the dispute fairly resolved. There would have, and mindful that as counsel
and
points
so
out.
And so the subsequent property owner had no idea that this tax proceeding was going on?
Correct, Your Honor. They purchased, to answer your question earlier, they purchased in April 2012, not 2008. April of 2012. Our client purchased in July of 2012. Buyer and seller both blissfully unaware that these proceedings had been, were going on in the Board of Tax Appeals, and when we got the order on December 3rd, 2012, only because we got a tax bill that was labeled delinquent, did we have our first inkling that these events were taking place. And so under those circumstances, the procedural due process, the idea that no one has standing, the property owner, if the property owner does not get actual notice that there is going to be a hearing regarding the valuation of that property, no lawful conclusion can be made at that hearing. It's as simple as that. And given the fact that it took 22 months to get from the Board of Revision to the Board of Tax Appeals, and then another 8 months for the Board of Tax Appeals to issue its decision, I submit that another 30 days continuance to allow the current property owner to participate would have been a reasonable exercise to make those proceedings legitimate. I believe I heard Ms. Antaki say that we had standing now, so I assume that I don't need to address the lack of standing issues in that regard. And lastly, I would submit that if one analyzes the Columbus case that she cited in that regard, the way it speaks to the persons that need to be notified, I think the fact that Squire Hill is the current property owner jumps out from that page with common sense that the identity of the parties, the successors in title, to try to distinguish between those in terms of who gets served and who doesn't, it does not serve the purpose of the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, we'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.